This is CIOI 101.5 FM.
The Hawk is on the air.
Hey guys, happy Tuesday. Hope you've had a great day so far, and thanks so much for tuning in again this week. I'm Sarah Jessica, as always, and this is Hot Shots on Air. And tonight I'm hanging out with John Harley and Alex DeRue of Code of Facto. Code of Facto is an indie rock duo based in Hamilton. And you can find the boys on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, and all streaming services under Code of Facto. And hey guys, thanks so much for talking with me tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, anytime.
Super stoked.
Yeah, awesome. I guess just to kind of like start everything off, how would you describe your sound and style as musicians?
As individuals or like as Code of Facto?
Any way you want to talk about it.
Well, John and I come from similar backgrounds. We both were really into classical music. As our discipline when we first started picking up our instruments, I was mainly classical piano.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for many years before I ever really thought about playing a guitar. So that was very classically influenced, very Beatle influenced. So very kind of classic rock. That was what I spent most of my time listening to and really gravitating towards and trying to replicate. What about you, John? What were you playing?
Pretty similar. Started playing the violin at 6 years old. I was quite vocal about wanting to play violin. It is a bit of a story that the original offering by my parents was piano lessons because we had a piano at the house. But for some reason, I don't know what it particularly was, but I said I wanted to learn the violin. And that was not necessarily something that was offered. But my grandfather was played the violin when he was growing up, because my great-grandmother was a music teacher. So when he heard that I wanted to learn the violin, he made it happen for me. So I grew up listening to almost exclusively classical music for a little while, because I actually had a little bit of snobbery growing up with pop music. For some reason, I was like, I'm going to listen to classical, but it was, I think it was my barber who first showed me the Beatles. Cause he put some music on and was like, you're a Brit, you should know who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the Beach Boys?
Mm-hmm.
and ashamed of my incorrect answer, I went home and studied the Beatles and fell in love. So definitely grew up with similar interests, listening to a lot of classic rock, looking through my dad's CD collection. Jimi Hendrix, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, all those guys. And then around high school, I could find like things that were sort of things on my own. Like my brother was a big influence on that. Like he showed me Radiohead, Arcade Fire, and all of a sudden I felt like I was into the things that were contemporary.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
That's a great question. Well, mine, I think I was just thinking about this last night, actually. I was at work and I heard a song come over the radio by a band I used to listen to in high school. It was like a pop, punk rock band called All Time Low.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just hadn't really been listening to them for a long time, for years, really. And I started opening that can of worms of thinking about all the bands I was
pretty much obsessed with and then just stopped listening to. I guess that's just my me growing up. But it's funny, when I really first started delving into records, I was listening to the White Album by the Beatles over and over again because it's kind of their goofy album, you know. It's mm-hmm. No Piggies, like, mm-hmm. listening to, like, songs like that.
And, that's the song that stood out from a White Album screen.
when I was a little kid, yeah. You know, I love Piggies. And
that's the best one, honestly.
I was listening to this record all the time, but then I realized that they had all these other ones, and before I started delving into, like, records like Revolver, I was listening to, really, the greatest hits album, that Redwood, like, One, whatever it was called. And that really opened up the door for me. And then I got into, like, Billy Joel, Rufus Wainwright, and I was still studying classical music, so, like, Bach and Beethoven, Chopin, stuff like that. And I was playing music that was a little bit above my level, but it would take me a lot longer to learn it, because I couldn't read music, and I still cannot to this day. I understand what I'm looking at, but I can't read it and play it at the same time. I'm not there yet. If I took the time, I could, but I just do it all by ear. Right. But I think by doing it by ear, it really helped me really actually get into the music and appreciate the music for what it was. Later on, now I'm starting to understand more of the intricacies of the material, but mm-hmm. that was something that really influenced me. A lot of the, like, John too, like, I didn't actually get into Pink Floyd nearly as much until actually I met John. I was aware of Pink Floyd, and I knew that they were, you know, really great musicians, but I never understood quite to the capacity in which they were. Mm-hmm. They were recording Dark Side of the Moon at Abbey Road in the studio right next to the Beatles when they were recording Sgt. Pepper. So I fixated on one band opposed to the other. Until last year, I started listening to the Rolling Stones. And, they're a great band, and I'm so sad about Charlie Watts. That's mm-hmm. you know, I just started loving the Stones for about a year. I can't imagine how it would feel like if Ringo passed away tomorrow. I'd just be like, no, Ringo. I'd be so sad. But yeah, that kind of music was very much my upbringing. And mm-hmm. through high school, it was very much kind of pop, punk, rock bands, like, it's not one, but it was Neon Trees. I remember listening to them a lot. I listened to, like, Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, The Maine. Not sure if you're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. They're a band from Phoenix, Arizona. I actually still quite enjoy that band, actually. They're probably one of the coolest examples to me of a band that went from, like, almost emo pop punk.
Right.
When I was a kid, I was like, this is great. And now I listen back to it being like, wow, I can't listen to this anywhere. People will not take my music seriously. but they really matured and grew and became quite actually a mature sound, and kind of actually in some capacities what I was trying to write in the earlier days of my exploring songwriting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they really went off and did stuff. So that was kind of cool. And now I'm, like, obsessed with listening to John Mayer. Mm-hmm. I love John Mayer. I don't feel no guilt saying that. That guy is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Songwriting is very inspiring, and it's quite good. But yeah, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And blues. Mm-hmm. Blues artists. Mm-hmm. I think John can also agree. We were definitely influenced by blues players, blues guitarists, like, B.B. King is a great one. J.J. Cale, Eric Clapton, Stevie Ray Vaughan, still one of the, you know, he's the GOAT of rock blues. John Mayer, John's a fan of too. John, I'm missing one. Who does Bright Lights, John?
Gary Clark Jr.,
yeah, that guy. Oh, I'm sorry, have you heard Gary Clark Jr. at all?
No, I'm familiar, yeah.
Oh, he's great. Mm-hmm. He's great. He's got mm-hmm. such a soulful tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great too. There's so much great music that's really been coming out throughout, like, 2010 to now.
For sure.
Of that kind of blues, bass, influenced rock, pop rock, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming very mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And we've worked with some guitarists in the past that
were heavily influenced by those people. Mm-hmm. And Chili Peppers too, actually, for that matter. That popped into my brain too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, I think there's like, we could probably fill the entire hour talking about people we like. Mm-hmm. There's so many. It's really just an ever-changing, never-ending list.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll have you on again, and then we'll fill the whole hour with just, you know, musical inspirations.
Yeah, I think that'll be for the next session.
Uh-huh.
You know, for that.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm down. That'd be fun, actually.
Yeah. Do you guys remember what you listened to around your house with your family sort of as kids? And do you feel as though those early influences have an impact on your current style?
Cool. Interesting. I'm happy to start this one out. Like, yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a whole lot of shared family listening with my family because there was some very different music taste between my parents. My father was certainly of the, very much of the 60s, psychedelic, progressive rock stuff.
Okay.
People like King Crimson, he really loved Cream because my dad was actually he was a drummer, growing up. So he was in a band in Hamilton as well.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of following in that. And he really had the taste all over the place. Like it was a really eclectic CD collection. So, you know, I could pick up, Hendrix one moment and then Maria Callas the next.
Mm-hmm.
because he was it certainly enabled this sort of interest in, sixties rock as well as the classical upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's taste in music. So my mom was, she's Chinese, born in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And so she grew up there, and a lot of the music I listened to with my mom was Cantopop, like Cantonese pop music, because that was her connection to Chinese culture in Malaysia. So we listened to a lot of Teresa Tang, Sam Hui, these really beautiful ballads, and she would kind of listen to them on repeat. So everything, it was kind of one of those things where we heard these songs so many times that even though I don't understand a heck of a lot of Chinese, I know a lot of these Cantonese pop songs from then. And even just yesterday, I was at Nations, the grocery store in Hamilton, and could hear Sam Hui being played in the grocery store. A lot of influence there. She also played the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack all the time. So that is also certainly like a contemporary classical blend. That had a lot of influence on me. We listened to, there's a CD series called Solitude, and it was all classical music played by the sea. And my mom liked it because it was very relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Where she grew up, Penang is an island, so she always loved the sound of water.
Yeah.
And so we were listening to these classical soundtracks, and my dad would be like, why are we listening to the sound of the water? The music is enough. it's putting us to sleep because we're driving and listening to, Taco Bell Cannon by the Sea. But that was a notable input because the first piece of music I really wanted to learn was Cannon by Taco Bell. And that had a big reason for me saying I wanted to learn a violin over piano.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very diverse interest. My grandfather was a jazz guy. So he had all the finger-picking guys, like Chet Atkins, also had collections of Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli. I kind of learned that some of the more classical, like the jazz and standards that I started to learn about, he had these CDs and he was collecting them, and it's been one of my greatest regrets that I wasn't able to, connect with him on that because I've been kind of unfolding this appreciation.
Yeah.
When he was not around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of my dad's musical interests, were very similar to mine. It was his CD collection that I used to, kind of rummage through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I found the Beatles, Rufus Wainwright, all the classics, Stevie Wonder, those sorts of guys. But truthfully, we didn't have music playing at all in our house. At all.
Mm-hmm.
Not at once do I actually really remember there being music on. We had a sound system, but it was never on. Except at Christmas, you'd hear classic Christmas songs. But what I do distinctly remember, and it's nice that you asked that question because it's kind of making me think of these things, and it's actually kind of, yeah, it's very nostalgic to think about it. But at my grandparents' house, my nan and granddad's, they used to live on the mountain, the escarpment in Hamilton. As you know, it's like a multi-tiered city. We would go up there every weekend to have dinner, and they have kind of like classic, really old, you know, wooden chest next to the, my nan was British, so she called the couch or the sofa the Chesterfield. Mm-hmm. So it would be next to that, and it had this really old radio player inside of it, and it was always on. And it was always pretty low, but as soon as you would get close to it, you would listen to it, and you'd hear it, but I didn't know how to turn it up or change the stations. Mm-hmm. It just was so foreign to me. So I would just sit on the ground and stare at the orange lit dial pad and just watch the meter move. And I think that was the most influential thing at that time for me, being mm-hmm. like, what is this? Why is it doing that? What are these sounds? And I'm trying to critically think about it because I have never thought about this once until you just asked that question.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what I was hearing because they were both older people, you know, like my granddad was in his late teens, you know, during the Second World War, and he fought in the Second World War, and the music that he was hearing there, I think he kind of brought back with him, and mm-hmm. was always dialing those stations, and my nana was listening to a lot of, probably, if I had to guess, probably a lot of the same things he was. I don't know really who controlled the station at the house because it was always on, but the music that was popular in the 30s and 40s, and I'm sure 50s and 60s too came in, but I never heard rock and roll really for that much, dominantly, like what they would consider pop rock and roll during that time. You know, I wasn't hearing Pink Floyd on the radio. I don't ever recall hearing a Beatles song. But I do remember hearing big bands, like the 1930s big bands, you know, like swing music. Like Duke Ellington or what was his name? Benny Goodman or like Glenn Miller. I remember those. Frank Sinatra was another one. I remember hearing Sarah Vaughan. And then I do recall there being, I remember hearing Willie Nelson. And mm-hmm. that was the one that my dad always really liked. There was a song that my dad tells me, I didn't cry a lot as a baby, but he said when I did, I wouldn't stop. But the few times I did, it would take me in the car, put me in the back seat, and they would put on Sunny Side of the Street by Willie Nelson, and I'd be out before the first chorus aww. Every time. And speaking of which, John, I would love to cover that song. Mm-hmm. but I remember kind of hearing, you know, the singing cowboys of country and western during that time. I guess they don't call it like the hillbilly genre, but it's mainly just like folk and blues, really. Mm-hmm. But that was a big one. But yeah, swing and jazz music really dominated, I believe, in that household at that time. And I remember hearing like Billie Holiday as well. And then right after my granddad died, the music changed in the house. I started hearing more of Buck Cherry, I believe his name is, right? Or Billy, yeah, Buck Cherry. Chuck Berry? Yeah, Chuck Berry.
Yeah, Buck Cherry.
That would be the name of our next record. Yeah, that was one I definitely remember hearing. Bob Hope was another one, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly. I remember hearing that. Oh, a lot of retro stuff. Yeah, a lot of like, I remember hearing doo-wop and, you know, rhythm and blues, and then rock and roll started kind of coming in, a little bit of rockabilly, but mm-hmm. my nana didn't really gravitate towards that stuff. She always listened to a lot of opera.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that, and there was a bookshelf that was built right into the wall that kind of hung by the window that overlooked their front yard, and I remember sitting there listening to this stuff and looking through the books, and I think that also, I started, in more recent years, started collecting books and reading through them and trying to write songs about them, and or letting the books inspire songs, and when my nana passed away 2 years ago, I took a lot of those books that I saw as a kid. Yeah, it's just fond memories. That kind of music was really filled the air, but it's funny because, you know, whenever I'm at my parents', you know, there's never really music playing. My dad wants there to be music playing, but my mom is very sensitive hearing. Mm-hmm. So it's, and my dad has not so much sensitive hearing. Yeah. He needs it louder and she needs it quieter. Mm-hmm. So it's just, the medium is just don't have it on at all. Mm-hmm. But I usually find a way to turn the music up. But mm-hmm. am I at my place, I always had music playing. I started collecting vinyl, and John has quite an impressive vinyl collection. And John and I used to live together at one point, too, and we used to have vinyl playing pretty frequently. And whenever we had dinner or, you know, just having a cocktail or jamming, for that matter, we'd play some records first and just kind of lay back and relax and then let it kind of just feel the moment. Yeah, fond memories, that's for sure. But that's kind of where it all started. Classical as well, for sure. Mm-hmm. My dad was a drummer as well. Not a serious drummer. John's dad actually played in a band and toured and recorded, but my dad was probably more, I guess, what you would call a hobbyist. Mm-hmm. Drummer, more for just leisure. I never actually got to witness that. I never saw it. There was never a drum kit in my house or anything of those sorts, but we did also have a piano, and I grew up seeing my sister play the piano, and she's also quite a talented musician. She hasn't really kept with it, but every time she sits down and plays, it's almost muscle memory for her. She remembers. But yeah, that was big. But I think the classical music kind of stuck out, and I think that's really when you go to start playing music in any sort of teaching setting, they generally kind of lead with classical music. It's kind of just a great introduction. I remember that. And I spent a lot of my earlier years at the Hamilton Conservatory, and they're strictly classical music. So that was definitely kind of, I want to say beaten into me, but I was not ever beaten, but it was more just, you have to do this. This is the correct method. There's a form, there's a formality, there's an expectation. If you're going to be there, you play this. And it's actually kind of funny because I remember I did some private lessons at first with a gentleman named Ken G, who was a Suzuki trained piano player who always played classical music. And he could play anything though. But I spent a lot of my early years there in this dusty, this dusty house not too far from my parents on Aberdeen Avenue. It always smelled like an old person lived there, if that makes any sense. And it had this beautiful piano tucked in the corner, and I have no idea how they got that piano in that place, nor how they got it out. But I remember the first thing I wanted to learn, other than, you know, like chopsticks, was Fleur-de-Lis. And I learned the very simple version of it. And as soon as we finished that, I'm like, did Beethoven really play it like this? Being naive and young, he's, I remember him saying, not even close. And he showed me how to play it, and I said, I want to play it like that. So, like, my first really collection of songs was learning how to play Fleur-de-Lis in its entirety, the real way, the intended way, and the Light Sonata, and that just opened up a can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was obsessed.
Yeah.
Obsessed with it. Yeah. And I learned it by ear. Taught me, you know, I always had the notation in front of me, but I didn't know what I was looking at. It was like trying to read another language, but I understood the sounds, and that's kind of where it all started for me.
Did you guys both grow up in Hamilton?
Mm-mm.
No.
I grew up in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. John grew up in Paris, Ontario, not too far from here. You know, like, it's near Brantford, right, John?
Yes.
Yeah, so in Brantford. John came to Hamilton for school. His grandfather had a house here. That's really where it started in the Dundas community.
Yeah.
And we spent all of our time there. Really. Yeah. It's such a vibe in that house. It just really, really projected an energy of creativity and warmth. And it's a very nostalgic atmosphere because it's almost like you walked in and it's still the 60s. The only difference now is that, you know, there's more modern musical equipment in the house, and there's, you know, and there's a television that's, you know, not a square.
Mm-hmm.
there's that kind of thing. But other than that, it's like going back in time. And
yeah.
I think for me, that heavily influenced me as well, because when I was in that house, you know, there's all these vinyl records, and we're listening to Miles Davis and the Beatles and, you know, some more modern artists as well. But that vibe just fit into it, and I kept thinking, man, this is it. This is what it's all about. And I think that actually, that whole atmosphere heavily influenced the way I approach songwriting. Because our music now, and a lot of the songs that are in the catalog, are very, I would say, I don't want to say classic rock influence, but I just call it classic music almost at this point. Very 60s and 70s based, you know, a very vintage sound, the analog recordings, very musical, lyrically speaking as well. You know, where it's about the story. You're telling a story and you're trying to connect with people, you know, and as much as John and I both can very much appreciate modern styles of music now, there's just something about that music that became timeless, and that's kind of just what we strive to do, is just make something that can stand the test of time, and when we look back on it, and we can say, no, this still works. But that atmosphere definitely cultivated that feeling.
Yeah.
No doubt in my mind.
Yeah. So why stick around Hamilton? Why not choose like Toronto or somewhere else? Why choose Hamilton as your city to make music in?
My family's here for one, but also, you know, we do have commitments here. I would work here, and family. John had the house too. And he was in school for quite a bit and still in and out of school and studying, and his sister was here as well studying. A lot of our friends were here, but you know, John and I kind of talk about this here and there, and we haven't really taken it too seriously yet, but I do anticipate John and I traveling at one point or another and maybe relocating, but you know, it made sense to be here at least for the first record.
Sure.
And probably even for the next two or three, who knows, we'll have to kind of see how things unfold, but we're not closed off to the ideas of traveling. John and I love to travel. We really appreciate those experiences. And, you know, even just the other day we were talking about, you know, maybe let's plan a little tour or something. Let's go drive out somewhere with no destination in mind and just play where we can. That doesn't scare us at all. So, you know, just being in Hamilton just feels right at the moment, because, you know, that's also where John and I really started. So it made sense to kind of do that. I like Toronto. It's not that it's too big for me, but there's something about it that it's something that just doesn't appeal to me as much as it's also a great place to go and play. But I've been talking to a lot of people. I'm a server and a bartender for my day job, and I talk to a lot of people that are moving from Toronto of all ranges of age, and they kind of all say the same thing. You can find this, but the sense of community is not as, you know, right in front of you. In Hamilton, it's, you can't really go anywhere without seeing someone you know.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of wholesomeness there and community that, for what we do, it's supportive. You know, people here really do care about the local arts and the food community and supporting each other, because they all really want everyone to succeed. Not everyone, of course, but like anywhere, really. But there is a real sense of community, which as songwriters and musicians, you want to be accepted. You know, it's scary going off on your own and trying to make it on your own and be an individual. You know, are they going to like me? Are they going to like what we have to say, our music? How do we show them what we're doing? How do we even get to them? You know, it's kind of daunting when you think about it. It's like when someone says, hey, here's a new instrument, go learn it. It's like, that's a lot. You know what it takes to do it, because you've already done it in one avenue, and it's a big undertaking, like anything new. But I think one of these days we'll probably go somewhere. Like John and I actually, I think it's almost 3 years now, we took a trip out to Halifax, to Nova Scotia, the east coast of Canada, and we went there, and that was a really pinnacle moment for John and I, because it was the first time we had traveled as musicians with the intention of playing, and we went to Inverness and Cape Breton and just had a time. It was wonderful, and it's such a different energy, and I wrote a couple songs when I was out there too, and we got to see really how, you know, another way of life, because it is quite different there, similar in some ways, but it is very different. There's a different temperament to the cities and the people and even just the air. You know, it's just a different energy, and that's very infectious. And that feeling of, I felt like we belonged there in that moment, and that was inspiring. And I kind of put that little thought in the back of our heads of, hey, we could come out here. you know, so it's, I think really it just comes down to, you know, you have to travel, you have to see the world, you got to try things, because if you only stay in one place, you're never really going to know what's out there and the opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think is special about Hamilton's music community?
There's a lot of us. Mm-hmm. there's a lot of musicians here.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, Hamilton is home for us. You know, mm-hmm. John wasn't born in Hamilton, he wasn't raised in Hamilton, but it did become a place for him as well, that music became a focal point for him.
Mm-hmm.
Working with myself and other musicians as well, good friends. It's Hamilton right now is home, and I think it made sense to be here. And the community itself has a lot of history. You know, we have some of the greats from here. You know, like Daniel Lenoir was from here. He started his own kind of underground movement at the YMCA, and with his late brother Bob Lenoir. There's so much knowledge here, and people that have, you know, done the grind, put the nose to the grindstone, as I say, and we've been able to sit down with some of these people and learn from them. And at the early stages, you know, as important as it can be, and some people would say you just got to go out and do it and, you know, just learn by trial and error and struggle and suffer and, you know, then you'll succeed. You know, we were just eager to learn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we both crave clarity and want to kind of find that balance. And these people were here and they wanted to help us. And we were already here. So it was like, well, great, here we go. Let's just keep doing what we're doing and be a part of this community. And John and I also used to play at this kind of cafe, bar, nightclub called the Baltimore House on King William, which is no longer there now. I actually work on that street a few doors down. But we kind of got a taste of what it was like to be a part of a little musical community, because they had an open mic on every Wednesday night. And John and I would try and go almost every single week, and we would play. And it was a very supportive community, you know. I would write a song, and then I'd go up and play it that Wednesday, and then you get to kind of see what the crowd thought. And it was just a wonderful experience. And, you know, actually when that place closed is kind of when I felt like, you know, maybe it is time to move on and try somewhere else, because that feeling has not come back to the city for me. You know, people tried to do the same sort of concept in different places, but they haven't succeeded in replicating that energy, that vibe, that atmosphere where everyone came together. And there was a community, there was a scene, and those people are still here, but I feel like some of them are, I feel like a lot of people are kind of timid, and they don't group together like they used to. And, you know, some people do, but it would just, I don't know if you would agree with that, John, but there hasn't been another Baltimore House since, and I have not yet felt that kind of connection like there was before. You show up and you'd see all those people you knew, and some of our really close friends, we met there, and we played with them. And, you know, even on our song Ode to Rose that you covered recently, the guitarist in that, Joel McCabe, we met Joel at Baltimore House. Mm-hmm. You know, we just see this guy on stage playing this beautiful guitar, and I've yet to find a place where you can just show up on any given Wednesday and you know you're going to hear a multitude of and variety of musicians that are just really talented, and you can just actually talk to them, and everyone is really open and wants to talk about music. Mm-hmm. You're like, I don't know, COVID probably had a lot to do with that as well, but
for sure.
even before COVID, people kind of just closed off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Depends where you are in your music career, I think, in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of really great artists that are based out of Hamilton now, but
mm-hmm.
like the Arkells is obviously a great example, but they don't even live in Hamilton really that much anymore than in Toronto, so
yeah.
It's not on the list here, but I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. Hamilton is it's a very up-and-coming city in itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being so close to Toronto, I give it 10 more years, it'll be something completely different, and hopefully it'll be better for music.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we had a problem around here with independent venues closing and those sorts of things happening even before COVID, and I think COVID really exacerbated that.
Oh, it just made it way worse. Like,
yeah.
We one of the last shows at the St. Hollywood was one of ours. We played at the Hollywood, and it was really sad, you know, mm-hmm. seeing all these places close, and COVID definitely accelerated maybe the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was just destined to happen, but people are still trying to make it work. But, you know, there's always opportunity. So hopefully that will change and that there'll be more opportunity for artists like ourselves to play in this city.
Hopefully,
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
I know. But, I'm crossing mine too. We're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a Coda Facto song. Hidden Treasure is about feelings of longing and lust for a potential partner.
Feeling freer by your side. Under stones we can find hidden treasure in our minds. I don't understand the feeling, not to mention the meaning of this love. It's not that hard to relate. Perhaps you're just afraid of your fate. I can say I'm too. Is more than enough, more than enough. Hidden treasure. Give me your heart. I have no care if it's broken or scarred. Where do we start? I know it's hard to lower your guard.
Yeah.
Under stones we can find hidden treasure in our minds. I don't understand the feeling, not to mention the meaning of this love. It's not that hard to relate. Just afraid of your fate, I could say I'm too as late. Oh, maybe your love's like a drop, burns the tip of my tongue. The quick hit of your touch is more than enough.
Anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Hamilton-based indie rock duo Coda Facto. We just came back from playing Hidden Treasure, the final track off of your 2021 EP Jamesville. What's the main theme behind that single?
Ooh, that's a good question too. Mm-hmm. You asked great questions, may I say.
Yeah.
Great interview.
No problem. Anytime.
So far, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that song was, it was an interesting song to write. Kind of came together in an unusual fashion. It just started with an acoustic guitar sitting in a living room. And I was playing around the same chords over and over in a cycle. And it really was just mindless thought. Like when I was writing the song, I wasn't really thinking too much about, you know, what am I necessarily trying to say in this very moment. I was really just trying to make it sound good. But then later on, it became something else. And I find a lot of the songs that have been written over the years kind of do that. I mean, you write a song and you almost connect to it later. But when it was being developed, it was really, like you said, it was this exploring, you know, new love and the vulnerability involved in that. And it's about exploring the unknown. Because, you know, when you get to know someone new, there's connection. There's a lot of excitement. But it really does leave you vulnerable. And ultimately, you need to kind of decide how you'll face those vulnerabilities. And that was really what the song was about. And when we first kind of started fiddling with it in studio or in rehearsals, you know, everyone was feeling it, you know, got a good energy, but the song was missing something. It was lacking a constant that we all knew it needed, and it wasn't there until we really considered recording it, because we started involving our now producer, Carl Jennings of Freedom Train, also owns a studio in Hamilton called Westmoreland Studios. He said to me, he's like, you know, I'm getting this Talking Heads vibe from the song.
Mm.
And truthfully, at the time, I hadn't really been listening to Talking Heads. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really been exposed to them at all. Mm-hmm. I knew some of the songs, but I didn't know it was the Talking Heads. But I started listening to the Talking Heads. I started kind of connecting the dots, being like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, there's got to be some extra rhythms back there, some subtleties, some nuances. And Carl is a phenomenal bass player. And he presented a bass line to us, which is the riff that you hear, the bum, 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 bum.
Mm-hmm.
That, and then the light went off in all of our heads. And we said, whoa, okay, there it is. All right. And it became a constant, began to lend. The riff is played through the entire song, the same chord progression through the entire song. There are no bridge chords. There are no chorus chords. It is the same progression all the way through. It is the same three chords. And that's almost kind of a Fleetwood Mac kind of vibe. You know, it's a constant. But we were able to make it different and provide these different elements and sections. And that was the first time we ever did that. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Especially to play live. I remember John and I had a lot of fun playing that one. You remember those, John? At Hollywood and whatever, people would go nuts. It was so much fun. But, yeah, it was just edgy and explosive. And it was the first song that we had that was really riff-based, you know, that constant. And that's just that kind of became a signature song for us. And it's quite different than the other ones, too. You know, I really like that it's different. Because all the songs are different. None of the songs are really, you know, the exact same. And that's kind of something that we've tried to do. You know, a lot of bands I see now, you know, they create their signature sound and they want everything to kind of be congruent. You know, it's easier to market a package that sounds the same, a brand. You know, the brand really is John and I and the violin and the guitar. So as long as those elements are in the songs, they're coda facto. And, you know, some people may say, you know, you need to make them all kind of sound similar. But I like the fact that they're different because no story is the same.
Why not?
And no song should be the same, in my opinion. You know, like, look at the Beatles. Again, I bring the Beatles up, but they're kind of a perfect example. There's such a plethora of variety. But they all just seem to come together and make sense because they had that same energy and that intention. That's kind of just where we unfolded with this and with this record and the releases that will come soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I hope that answers that question.
You did, for sure, yeah. You guys literally just dropped your debut EP, Jamesville, just a couple days ago. And, you know, this episode is pre-recorded, so it'll be a few days ago when this is actually on air. But can you go over some of the main themes on that project?
Main themes?
Yeah, running themes, maybe like aesthetics, maybe, you know, sounds, just sort of, yeah, like the main themes behind that album.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
John, you want to start it off, and I'll just kind of interject here then?
Well, I think what really brought together those songs was, and that this is the choice for name and the cover art, was these songs were recorded at a time when, Alex was living on James Wharf, at that building.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of different phases in this EP, because it really is a culmination of 10 years of work. We've had different names, we've had different lineups, we've rehearsed in different places that were our homes. Throughout all of this, that was kind of the center. When you're asking, what made Hamilton a special, music city to us? What made it special for us has been that it reached out to us. Early in the interview, we're talking about, from my experience, Alex reached out to me, we play a bit, and we go to Baltimore House, and we're reached out there by other people who were playing. We spent a lot of time at the Mule Spinner, because Glenn Marshall and Bob Lanois reached out to us and invited us into that space. And then we were spending some time on Upper Ottawa, rehearsing
Ottawa North.
Yeah. It's been a lot of different phases, and James North was kind of at the center of all of this. It was kind of the common ground. And with the music, I think that there's definitely a lot of themes about the changes of the people and their stories that became close to us, because Alex wrote the songs, but they actually pertain to people that we both knew
mm-hmm.
or events. And so I think that's where I would definitely hand it over to Alex, because I think he can explain a little bit about his growth as a songwriter over time, the influences that were characterized by the Jamesville era you're probably going to be talking about.
Yeah, Jamesville was special. It was the place where I truly felt an independent musician for the first time. Mm-hmm. I had my own space. I made it my own. I would set up, a speaker system and a mic, and I'd have them always readily available. And, I'd just be playing almost nonstop. And some of the songs were written in that apartment, and the entire EP primarily was recorded while living there. And it just became, like John said, it was a focal point, an epicenter of creativity. And it's actually funny, because the cover photo of the pink building, which conveniently said Jamesville on it, which was such a score,
mm-hmm.
that is my apartment. Those windows were the apartment that I was in.
Yeah.
And that little fire escape John and I were standing on, we had to move my clothes out of the way to climb out onto it. And we're mm-hmm. Can this support our weight?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been on there before.
Yeah.
It just kind of came together. It just made sense, especially when we were trying to think of a name for the record and thinking, well, this is a time and place where we are right now. That's reflected on where we've been and where we're going. And it just connected and made sense that that's where it was. And that's where it kind of all came together. And yeah, it just felt right. And the songs really kind of came to life there and kind of gave a new perspective on, a different method of approach. Being at the Mule Spinner for almost 3 years with Glenn Marshall and Bob Lanois really inspired us and really taught us a lot of lessons about, I wouldn't say the hidden meanings of looking at songs, but definitely things that we weren't necessarily focusing on at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We were just really just trying to play, because
mm-hmm.
we love to play. But they taught us so many valuable lessons. But, you don't always need to be playing. Anyone can play notes. But
yeah.
It's about playing the right notes and where you're speaking to the audience musically and identifying the feel of the song, the groove of the song, and really projecting that.
Mm-hmm.
And that just came to life at Jamesville almost naturally. And yeah, and it's just, it's a very, very special time And, you know, I've left that area now. I'm not living there anymore. And I was ready to go, you know, and it was an appropriate time to leave. The record was done. It felt like that chapter was ready to come to a close. And that's kind of what Code of Facto is. You know, we, John and I were thinking of names on James North having dinner one night. And we're thinking about, you know, what does it mean, what we're doing right now? Where have we been? You know, John said we've had lineups in the past. We've had different approaches to songwriting and collaboration and production. And it kind of just came full circle, which is really what Dakota is, you know. Mm-hmm. The beginning is an end, and it represents a new beginning. And that's kind of where we've been musically for over the course of the 10 years since John kind of and I met to where we are now. And De Facto, you know, the Latin phrase, you know, it's just a matter of fact. John mm-hmm. came up with the name Code of Facto,
yeah.
And I'm sitting there being like, John, that's a great name. That's a great name. How do we spin it? How do we make it work? And what does it mean? And then we really kind of figured it out, and it felt right. Mm-hmm. And all those names came together very quickly. And when it feels right, you just know. You know, we're looking across at each other, and we're smiling and thinking, yeah, I think we got it, you know. And the name Janesville came effortlessly, really, when we just stopped to look around us and say, you know, what, where are we really right now in this moment? And it was Janesville.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. we went with it. We're proud of it. We did it. It's out. And it's just the beginning. It's the first. And, you know, we're really excited about what we're doing. We've hit the ground running. We're not done yet. We've already, you know, we try and be active in the studio, and we were fortunate enough to be able to work in the studio over the past year and a half, and we've been recording more songs that we're just really excited about and cannot wait to share more music with people. Because now, as soon as you release something, you get that, like, that itch of, like, oh, I want to do that again. Mm-hmm. I want to get that out. I want to keep sharing stuff. And mm-hmm. that's where we are right now. It's a very exciting place to be. Mm-hmm. And as long as we keep writing and recording, I don't think that feeling's ever really going to go away. And now I can understand, you know, what all these musicians that have quote unquote made it mean now when they say, you know, there's a feeling that this doesn't go away. And, you know, that may be partially due to their success, but I think it really is just because you have creative freedom. And we've finally found that. And I'm so happy where we are. And mm-hmm. I'm definitely okay with that continuing.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a favorite song on the album?
Ooh, that's a good one too. That changes.
That's for me.
Yeah, Hidden Treasure, that's a jam. Mm-hmm. It's got an energy that really, really pushes you. I think it depends what day you ask me, because I know I have a connection to each song, obviously, and you definitely feel like all the songs are my favorite song, because they all, in their own right, have a meaning and a message and a story, and all those stories and messages are meaningful, and that's never going to go away. That's mm-hmm. always going to be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Rock and Roll Sounds. That feeling's really great. I like the cohesiveness of it. The harmonies are wonderful. I love it. There's an energy that just makes me feel happy. And, you know, Ode to Rose, the opening track, is a great collaboration between John and Joel and I. And that's, you know, that's meaningful as well. But one that really stands out to me is She. Mm-hmm. I've always really loved that song. It's the oldest song on the EP that was written about 6 or 7 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a song that kind of always just felt right. And that's all I really need to say about the song. It felt right. It still does. And I don't think that's ever going to go away. And that's a song actually also that we had played around with before in previous studios and with different lineups and playing live. And, you know, there was a song that we got a lot of positive reception from when we were playing live, and it just made us really excited to play. And after we would always finish it and we'd strike that final chord in the song, I remember always kind of looking around at each other, and we'd all have a big smile on our face, and we'd feel good about it. And that's something really tried to capture in the studio recording, and it was great, you know. And I remember also Sorry Not Sorry, That's another, I think that actually is probably one of my favorites, because that was 100% written in that space. Looking out the window of one of the windows of the apartment, front facing on James North, I would be standing at my microphone with the blinds up so I could see the street. I would open up all the blinds so I could let all the James North energy pour into the unit and have all the natural lighting fill up the room. I almost never had the lights on because I didn't need to. And I remember, you know, playing the song and looking out the window, and there's a store right across the street, and it was called Sorry Not Sorry. And spelled differently, but that's kind of where that song came from in itself, you know, just standing there and being inspired by the street, and it came so quickly. And yeah, that whole area was just a mode of inspiration. And it was a wonderful time, a wonderful experience. So mm-hmm. I can't say there's one song particularly that I like more than the other, but they all have a special place.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, so in short, all the songs are Alex's favorite.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go. I guess that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you guys?
Sorry, say it one more time.
Yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you guys?
Ooh. Well,
we got a lot of songs
playing. We got a lot of songs.
And so, like, it's kind of funny asking, like, which song is your favorite? Because, like, these are five from a very large catalog of songs that we have
mm-hmm.
that were favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more like, we want to make these ones a priority. So they've all had occupy that space for us, that this is a song we're super excited about and we really want to work on it. So, you know, Alex really recounted a lot of that. But we're definitely looking at, we're well on our way to recording another collection of songs. We're continuing to work with Carl, and you're going to see a bit more of us performing. We were hoping to book a show today outside, but it's raining a lot. But we will rethink that.
Yeah.
I think that's the part where we're at, where we've had the advantage of being able to incubate over the course of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And now we got a plan coming out.
There we go.
I think we want to sort of reapproach it, because a lot of the places that we used to do that are gone. We're coming out into a different world. It's a different sort of world of planning. We got a different name, and we're rebuilding some of that. But I think you'll be hearing from us. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome.
Lots of music to record. We want to play live. We want mm-hmm. to get out and just hit the streets, play, share music with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just the bottom line, really. It's just try and be the best we can be, challenge ourselves creatively, and explore new avenues and work with new people. We've been really fortunate with our collaborations as well with local musicians. And
mm-hmm.
it's just exciting, really. We just want to make new friends and just keep making music. But yeah, lots of music to come. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty excited about that.
I'm looking forward to it. And thank you so much for jumping on here and talking to me today. This is great.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure. Yeah, mm-hmm. we really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Mm, yeah, anytime. So everyone listening, you can find Code of Facto on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, and all streaming services under Code of Facto. And we're going to wrap up this episode of Hot Shots on Air with another single from Code of Facto. She is a slow romantic ballad about finding your dream partner.
Hey everyone, this is John Harley.
This is Alex DeRue. We're Code of Facto, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
She's with me, the girl right there I found in my dreams. She wants to be a movie star, something in between. Long blonde hair, it just ain't fair how beautiful you are. I'll spend my night counting my stars.
is easily the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. Hard to believe, only a month has passed so fast. Wouldn't you agree? Now try to be subtle, and if it ain't too much trouble, gonna tell you what you need.